That's great to see everyone here today on such a nice day. If you're following along, we're going to be in the book of 1 John, chapter 2, dealing with verses 15 and 16. Now, there was a rich man who was near death, and he was grieved because he had worked so hard for his money all his life, and he wanted to be able to take some of it with him in the afterlife. So he began to pray that he might be able to take some of his wealth with him. An angel heard his plea and appeared to him. He said, "Sorry, but you can't take your wealth with you." The man begged the angel to speak to God to see if he might bend the rule. So the angel came back later and informed the man that God had allowed to let him take one suitcase. The man was overjoyed, and he gathered his largest suitcase and he filled it up with gold bars and placed it beside his bed. And soon afterwards he went on to his reward and he went to heaven, and St. Peter looks at the suitcase and says, "Whoa, fella, you can't bring that in here." The man explained that he had permission from God himself to do it. Well, Peter says, "Well, let me go and check." So Peter goes out and check, and he comes back. He says, "You're right. He's here alive, one bag. But I'm supposed to check its contents before I let you in here." So Peter opens the suitcase, and he starts to examine the gold bars. And he looked at the man with a puzzled look on his face and said, "You brought papers?" Now, worldliness is something that people are into today. And I was watching a program on the History Channel. It's The Men That Built America. And it talks about the Vanderbilts and the Rockefellers and the Carnegies and all that. And, you know, they fought all their lives for worldly possessions. But in the end, they had to leave it all behind for their relatives after that. So there are several marks of worldliness that we can see in just these two verses. So in 1 John chapter 2, verse 15 and 16, "Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the desires of the flesh and the desires of the eyes and pride and in possessions, is not from the Father, but is from the world. And the world is passing away along with its desires. But whoever does the will of God abides forever." So, worldliness is a preoccupation with wrong things like pride, pleasures, possessions, popularity, power, position in life, people-pleasing, and privileges and self-reason, being selfish. So, on the evening of Lincoln's assassination, John Wilkes Booth stops in a saloon near the Ford Theater and uses alcohol to nerve himself for what was going to be his date in history. One drink, two drinks, three drinks, and on. Later that night, Lincoln's bodyguard, John F. Parker, was distracted while the president and the party were comfortably enjoying the performance of Our American Cousin in the Ford Theater. Charles Forbes, Lincoln's footman, and Francis P. Burke, Lincoln's coachman, left the Ford Theater with Parker for a drink, presumably at the same saloon that John Wilkes Booth had went for and just left. Now, while Parker was distracted in the saloon, the door to the presidential box was left unguarded. And, of course, we know history then that John Wilkes Booth slipped in and shot the 16th president, who later died the next day. So, as someone once said, those two saloon visits could have been the most costliest drinks in American history. It's just that, like the enemy, to distract us from our duties and take advantage of a situation to cause trouble. Satan likes to distract us, tries to throw us off. Now, we know that Satan has lost that power in death that he has. We know that he does not have the power to put us in the same boat that he's in and condemn us, but he does want us to fail in our life. Someone once quoted, "Too many people forget that Satan desires to sift us like wheat so that he can steal, slaughter, kill, and destroy us and everything that is good. Worldliness opens the door to all forms of evil in our personal life, relationships, and even ministries. And worldliness is the preoccupation with ease and affluence. We all like the modern conveniences. We, you know, microwave, a car that starts and, you know, power windows and, you know, the more things we have that makes it easy, the better. We all kind of like that. But it elevates creature comfort to the point of idolatry. Large salaries and comfortable lifestyles become necessities of life. And we see people and they're driving the best cars and live in the best houses and wear the best clothes and their whole life is into that. And nothing else takes place. Even their families suffer. Like someone once said, if you want to get to the corner office in a business, you pretty much have to be that absent parent. And you pretty much have to be a slave to that corporation or business that you're in and devote time. Because they don't want to hear when your kids have birthdays or baseball games or anything like that. All they want to hear is that you're ready to act at a moment's notice for the sake of the business. So it almost becomes idolatrous that we worship the job because it provides us with our things instead of worshiping God who provides all things. Worldliness is not just about reading certain magazines or people who live, you know, hedonistic lifestyles and spend too much money on themselves and you know, of course, people secretly want to be with them. That's why when you get to the checkout stand, there's all the magazines with all the celebrities on there. People who actually never did, you know, much more than be an entertainer or something like that. You know, they weren't in the military and you know, put their life on the line. They weren't great scientists or someone like that that came up with new medical discoveries or new devices in life. They're just the people out there and the people who are out there worshiping them in a sense by, you know, having to follow their lives and secretly wanting to be like them. Worldliness is simple pride and selfishness in disguise. Worldliness is harboring grudges, nursing grievances, and wallowing in self-pity. And I think that's why a lot of times there's so many pills out there and so many different drugs for people, and people are suffering from mental issues of anxiety and fear and depression, even though they're much better off than their ancestors were. You would think there'd be a lessening of the need for that sort of thing in this day and age, but there's not. Now, David Roper, in The Strength of a Man, wrote that. And that's what people need today, is to rely upon God. If we rely upon God, there's less anxiety in our life. There's less problems in our life. If we're not worldly like the world, then our focus is on someplace else where it's more important. So, too many people think that worldliness is something limited to exterior behavior. Others think worldliness is hanging out with the wrong kind of people. Worldliness is the wrong attitude of the heart that indicates a lack of a total consuming love for the Lord God. When someone does not throw their whole life into worshiping God, but throws their whole life into worshiping the world, their life is not much better than the drug addict who winds up at the bottom, totally destroyed by the drug. And they wind up, after many failed relationships and children they don't really hardly know, and children that don't know their parents sometimes, they wind up in those situations. And it's not the greatest life there is. And all that's left is the money. And the money's not going to hug you. The money's not going to watch over you when you're sick. And the money's not going to help you. Now, I know that, like someone once said, money doesn't buy everything, but can't buy you love, but it buys most everything else, is what they said. People can feel comfortable with that money. But there are things that can wipe that out. It's important to remember that the Lord hates sin. God's wrath is directed towards all the sins of worldliness. Those who fail to commit themselves to the Lord Jesus will not only miss God's blessings, but experience God's displeasure. And there are many ways that worldliness dilutes, pollutes, and distorts the thinking of billions to their own detriment. So several signs of worldliness and how we can learn to avoid them. Preoccupations with earthly concerns. Now, we're busy people, everyone has a lot to do, and we're running around like crazy sometimes. And we like to stay active, and we're tempted to get preoccupied with the things that distract us from Christ and the kingdom. Things that preoccupy our minds, so there's little room left over for what Paul wrote in Colossians 3, 1 through 3. He said, set your thoughts on things above, not on earthly things. For you died and your life is now hidden with Christ in God. So again, that theme that Paul wrote about is that we have to live in the world, we have to work in the world, we have to get ahead in the world, and we have to, you know, get our children and everything else through this world. But our life is now hidden with Christ. We die to that old self, and we die to what the world tries to tell us is so great out there. Commercial after commercial tells us all the things that will make our life great. And you know, some of them will. Maybe the right kind of medicine will get rid of the allergies, or you know, cure arthritis, or something like that. A lot of those things are good, but a lot of the world, it presents to us places of pleasure, less godly places. It presents to us that we deserve the good things in life, and that we should have it. You know, happiness is a concept that's relatively new from the 20th century on. Before that, there was a lot of misery. In the 1800s, the average lifespan was like 40, you know, or a little bit more. Someone that lived in their 60s and 70s that certainly outstripped, you know, the norms of that day. In that day, children, many of them died in childbirth. If you find a real old cemetery out there with grave markers, you know, from the 1800s, you'll find a lot of children's graves. It was just the way it is. So happiness is something we expect now that wasn't always a concept in this world. And I'm not saying who doesn't like to be happy. Of course, we don't want to be miserable or you know, go through a lot of misery like our ancestors did. But that we deserve it is not always the case sometimes. George Gallup, the pollster, said, we find that there is very little difference in ethical behavior between churchgoers and those who are not active religiously. The levels of lying, cheating, and stealing are remarkably similar in both groups. 8 out of 10 Americans consider themselves Christians. Gallup said that only about half of them could identify the person who gave the Sermon on the Mount, and fewer still could recall 5 of the 10 commandments. Only 2 in 10 said they would be willing to suffer for their faith. So, we see people like to have a little faith in their lives. They like to at least say there's faith there. I think a lot of times it's just to make sure that just in case there's a God, I don't want to forget him, so maybe he won't forget me. But without reading the Bible, they know that they're only paying some lip service to him and not committing themselves to him. Those of us who read the Bible know that God offers a life that is great and grand and happy and joyful in everything that we do. And it's not filled with all these great pleasures of life, and it's not filled with riches, and it's not filled with that. It is filled with contentment in what God does give to us. Pride is another one. Now, the word for pride is alazonia, which means boasting of one's importance to the point it becomes vainglory. It's pitiful to see someone who thinks they're something special when they're not. Prideful people are setting themselves up for major disappointment. And in 1 Peter 5, verses 5 and 6, Peter wrote, God humbles the proud but gives grace to the humble. You know, the pride are just that. You know, sometimes they speak too much, and it's like the old saying, well, that's enough about me. What do you think of me? You know, as the joke goes. So pride is something that we need not have. Because really, what are we prideful for? The things we did? Well, God gave us the gift to either build a business or the talent to make things with our hands, and he gave us all that, and he allowed us to keep it and do it. And in the first place, he made all those things that we're profiting off of. Pride for us is pride in the gospel. We're proud that Jesus was willing to save us in this, but we look to God and take pride in what he's done for us, not in what we have, because we know all of that comes from God, and it can all go away in a second. As they say, pride goes before the fall. Pleasures of life. Too often human desires incline one's heart towards things that will please our old sinful nature instead of God and that new nature. Paul again wrote in Romans 8, verses 6 through 8, the mind set on the flesh is death, but the mind set on the spirit is life and peace. When we're set on the worldly pleasures, all they do is lead to disappointment. Possessions is the next one. The craving to accumulate things overcomes your commitment to lay up in store for God. Jesus said, don't lay up for yourself treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Matthew 6, verse 24. Wherever our treasures are, that's where our heart's going to be. Now we all, you know, like what we've done and like what we have, and of course there's good things to have and stuff like that. But we don't let those, if we're following God, we don't let those possessions consume us. We rely on God to make sure we have the things that we need. So don't get overly caught up in having what the Joneses have. Be satisfied with what God gives them. So, an illustration of that is the course of rebellion against God may be very gradual, but it increases in rapidity as you progress in it. And if you begin to run down the hill, an ever-increasing impetus will start you down faster and faster to destruction. The Christians ought to watch against the beginning of worldly conformity. I do believe that the growth of worldliness is like strife, which is like letting out of water. Once you begin, there's no knowing where you will stop. We sometimes get the question concerning certain worldly amusements. May I do so and so? I am very sorry whenever anyone asks that question, because it shows that there is something wrong or would not be raised at all. If a person's conscience lets them say, well, I can get to A, he will very soon go on to B, C, D, and E, and through all the letters of the alphabet. I think it was said by C.H. Spurgeon. Something else he said, when Satan cannot catch us with a big sin, he'll try a little one. It does not matter to him as long as he catches his fish, when bait, what bait he uses. Beware of the beginning of evil, for many who bade fair to go right have turned aside and perished amongst the dark mountains in the wide field of sin. It starts out little, and then it grows big. We need to guard our hearts against letting worldly pleasure, because the world's going to keep telling us, oh, you deserve that. You know, don't go to church and do all that church stuff. That just takes away some of your time. That just takes away from what else you could be doing. You could be riding motorcycles, you could be bicycling, you could be playing golf, you could be going fishing, you could be, you know, any number of pleasures that while on the surface are not anything sinful in themselves, but just the timing of it that becomes suspect. So there's another quote out there, it's someone unknown, he says, the world's smiles are more dangerous than its frowns. When the world frowns at you, you must be doing something right by God. When it smiles, it's happy in what it gives you. The last thing you would want to be known as is a friend of the world. Someone who dilutes God's word and doesn't give people the straight truth. C.H. Spurgeon again said, if I had a brother who had been murdered, what would you think of me if I daily consorted with the assassin who drove the dagger into my brother's heart? Surely, I too must be an accomplice in that crime. And he goes on, sin murdered Christ. Will you be a friend of it? Sin pierced the heart of the incarnate God. Can you love it? And that's a good pointed question that he asked. If how can we consort with that which caused his death in the first place? So think about that the next time we were tempted to do something that maybe we did in the old days where someone's encouraging us to do, you know, in life. Another problem people have is position orientation. We live in a very competitive society, and someone wants to be above someone else or get the leg up on someone else and be the top dog in the neighborhood. God told Jeremiah, do you seek great things for yourself? Seek them not, for behold, I will bring evil upon all flesh. So the worldly things are not to be sought by God's people. Paul also wrote in 1 Corinthians 3, 1-5, to the jealous-minded Corinthians on this problem, you are still worldly, For since there is jealousy and quarreling among you, you are worldly. Are you not acting like mere men? For when one says, I follow Paul, and another, I follow Apollos, are you not mere men? What, after all, is Apollos? And what is Paul? Only servants, through whom ye came to believe, as the Lord has assigned to each his task. So, who do we follow today? Hopefully it's grandma that lived her life and passed away in faith, or grandpa that's the same, or parents. And it's not some mogul out there who's telling us how to get rich quick, or anything like that. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with starting a business or making money. Again, it depends on what our priorities in life and what we do with that time, what we do with that effort, and what we do with what God gives us from that. It's all about what's more important to us. Is the Lord more important to everything else in our life? Then those things will be fulfilled for us. Or, our last one this morning is people please. Everybody likes to please people, and, you know, because we like people to like us. And it's just natural. And worldly people live in a constant state of anxiety because they're afraid important people might not like them. They might not know the right person or know the right manager at work that might give them a position or a leg up. And they spend their whole lives working again for their job. Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians 4, verses 3 through 4, I care very little if I am judged by you or any human court. Indeed, I do not even judge myself. My conscience is clear, but that does not make me innocent. It is the Lord who judges me. Now what Paul was saying is his conscience is not clear because he's pure as the driven snow, but he knows that the Lord is going to judge him, and the Lord is going to judge him based upon his acceptance and commitment to Christ. But the world worries about who's going to judge them. And we shouldn't be that way. If you stand for Christ, people will persecute you. Not physically here, verbally, but people will try to quiet you. People try to quiet every place they can in this world. The ACLU is trying to stop some cheerleaders from writing Bible verses on the big piece of paper that football players run through at the beginning of the thing. And they tried it on the basis of school, but it's their personal messages that they write on there that the cheerleaders themselves write. So the world is going to not like you, in other words, if you're standing with Christ. It's not going to be pleased with your stance on following Christ because it goes against 99% of what they believe. Even if some of them believe in God. Because it's not really a belief in God, but just a covering of a base to make sure that they mention God before they pass from this earth. Now, in closing this morning, some years ago, musicians noted that the errand boys in a certain part of London all whistled out of tune as they went about their work. And it was talked about for some time, and someone suggested that it was because the bells of Westminster were slightly out of tune. Something had gone wrong with the chimes, and they were discordant. They didn't hit the right tune. The boys didn't know there was anything wrong with the whistling they did, and quite unconsciously, they had copied the pitch of the mistuned bell. You know, we tend to copy the people with whom we associate with. We borrow thoughts from the books we read and the programs we watch and listen, almost without knowing it. And just like these young errand boys who whistled out of tune, the world can get into us and make us less than we should be for Christ. It can water down our Christianity. It can make us weak. It can cause some to fall away if it's enough. And we need to guard against that. Worldliness has no profit for us, especially as Christians. Our prophet is following the living God and His Son who died on a cross to save us. And in our obedience of Him, we walk anew, not worried about this world, other than to want to bring the gospel to it and help those who are hurting in it. We're not worried about the possessions of this world, but we're worried about its condition, and we pray for it. I don't know what your condition is this morning, if you have need of the church, but won't you come as we stand and sing the song of invitation?